This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my beautiful studio here in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas. Come record at the studio, 817-733-5256, or call that same number, or email me at phil@philpritchett.com to book Phil Pritchett and the full band. Aw, fans, thank you for downloading so many times, some of you numerous times. The new record, Mark of the Human Hand, the new studio album we did, and also the new bootleg, exclusively available on philpritchett.com on P2 Tunes, Alive Alone, $4, 24 songs. Thank you so much, everybody. It is you, the fan, downloading for those $4 here and there that keep the podcast and all this kind of stuff going along. We couldn't be more happy about it. Well, man, of course, the last two podcasts, Kurt South and I, were in a reflective mood, looking back on the year that was on the P2 Podcast, a year that some never thought would be or should be. And yet, folks, here we stand. Here we sit, opining on things. I wanted to put together I had a couple of people email me talking about some moments over the last year that stood out in their mind. Some of y'all come up to me at the shows and, man, Phil, that was so great. Y'all talking about this. That was so funny. And great stuff on the podcast. And I've been compiling a little list here of the top 10 moments. We could certainly and should do a top 10 list at some point that include our guest appearances. Certainly with Gary P. Nunn and Pete Cotney, Buddy Huffman, Pat Green, Owen Temple, Jason Stolle, and so many others. Who have come in here and contributed to the podcast. I had to leave any guests out because, as you know, folks, the podcast started with me and Kurt South, didactic, dark singer-songwriter that you all know and love from coast to coast. So I ended up compiling here a top 10 moments of me and Kurt on the air. That I heard the most about, that I got the most emails about, the most feedback about, out on the road, emailing me stuff, calling me with little asides, posting comments online, etc. So we're going to delve into a little top 10 list, the top 10 2009 moments on the P2 Podcast, according to you, the fans, through feedback, just accumulated by me and Kurt here for kind of a year-end review. Oh, like any good top 10 list. We'll go from 10 to 1. How about that? Well, number 10 comes in here. An old story from a few years back. The great Ryan Lynch. We all love Lynch. It's his birthday at every show. Ah, so fun and outstanding. We did get into a discussion, Kurt and I, back on episode 3, way early in the podcast, about full band eating contests, where it was revealed that full band drummer Stuart Wiley, the great Stuart Wiley, once consumed 57 pieces of pizza. What was it, a CC's? I think it was a CC's or a Little Caesars. I want to say CC's. Yikes. He's still going strong out there, I can tell you. Stuart Wiley, we love you. But this goes back to an episode in El Campo at Greek Brothers where Ryan Lynch consumed no fewer than 48 raw oysters on the half shell. Ryan Lynch coming in here. Number 10.
Everything great. I apologize for that.
Greek Brothers is great, though.
Great food. George down there. El Campo, Texas. playing Greek Brothers, the best part of that gig was the food, man. They did homemade, just really great food. And Ryan Lynch sat down, hungry. You know, he'd been on the road all day. He said, man, I'm gonna get some oysters. I love oysters. Raw oysters on the half shell. What is it, the month has to end in an R to eat oysters?
Mm-hmm.
Sure enough, I can't remember what it was, but, you know, October, November, something. Lynch is in there. We're playing a show. He says, man, bring me out two trays. Two dozen oysters on the half shell, the ice. And they bring out these two things. I mean, he sits there with the crackers, the horseradish, the whole deal. He puts down all 24 oysters. Me and Stolly are eating like a... We're splitting a grilled cheese sandwich or something, you know. Just trying not to be wrong for the gig. That's an art form. We'll get that's another topic.
That's two shows.
That's two shows about how to eat before a show to prevent anything bad from happening. Some good advice for some of you young musicians out there. Anyway, so we're sitting there before the show. Lynch eats 24 raw oysters, and he looks pretty good. And the waitress comes back over, picks up the tray, says, can I get you guys anything else? And Lynch just points to these two trays and just says, let's do this again. And just the look on her face was just of such horror. I mean, she was just awestruck by this. I look at Stolly, I'm like, oh my gosh. And she said, I'll have to check. Because she didn't even know if they had that kind of product on hand, you know. So she goes back in there and she says, okay. So they bring out another two dozen oysters. And Lynch, at this point, he's kind of got the sweats going a little bit.
Oh, yeah, just horseradish
like
face.
Horseradish face. He's been drinking. He's red-faced.
So
was
he legally drunk when he did this? Probably.
Well, this was before the show. I mean, so
yeah,
no,
but if
I don't
it was after 12 noon and he had a
No. He wasn't a big early day. You know, It was still pretty early in the day. I mean, we're just eating dinner before the show. And they bring him back. But, dude, his testosterone levels had to be. Didn't that, like, boost your testosterone something? Yeah. In your zinc levels. I mean, he's just wired.
Mercury poisoning, probably.
He's just mercurial at this point. Gross. And dude, he sits there, they bring out the rest of the oysters, and sure enough, dude, he just slurps them all down like it's nothing. 48 raw oysters. 40. Think how much matter that is.
It's
gray,
disgusting,
slippery, uncooked raw matter in your stomach. 48 oysters. Eats it all down, you know, and has a piece of cheesecake and plays the gig. Unbelievable. Ryan Lynch, we love you. What can I say?
Mercurial. Mercurial indeed. Well, man, that just gets this thing rolling off to a brisk start. A brisk start. Well, we had Bacon Fat, the greatest garage band in the United States, from Effingham, Illinois. Richard and Mike in here doing some recording, talking about all things. When Michael Jackson passes away. Now, we had a great podcast with Richard and Mike talking about Jackson, his influence, and all this kind of thing. They were a bit young maybe for his peak, unlike myself, who was there. You know, I was a young kid in the mid-'80s, moonwalking through the halls of my middle school, sequin glove and all. Not really, but, at home in front of the mirror. Did I ever practice some moves? Of course. Who among us did not? Well, I could not wait after those guys were in here. Kurt South was not here. What did Kurt South think of the Michael Jackson funeral? I was holding out a little hope that he might shed a tear, you know, show some contrite nostalgia, some sort of nice flowering reflection of Michael Jackson. But something deep inside me knew that Kurt South was having none of it. So number 9, we got Kurt South. Maybe a week or two after Jackson had passed away, the funeral had been, they'd done the funeral, and Kurt South just comes shuffling in here with a big dip of snuff in his mouth, just, you know, kind of growling, groveling, kind of, you know, kicks over a couple of mic stands, clears a pass, sits down on the IKEA sofa here in Trinidad World Recording, and I said, man, I wanted to get your thoughts, Kurt, on the Michael Jackson funeral spectacle, number 9. What do you think, South? How do you sum up Michael Jackson?
The funeral was a travesty.
The funeral was a travesty. How so?
Oh, man. I'm gonna piss people off. Not just
please remember this is a family oriented program.
It is
family oriented program. We're talking about Jackson music.
You know, I feel like Michael Jackson and his death and his funeral, the whole thing that went down, kind of encapsulated part of what's wrong with America and our celebrity culture.
Here we go. Podcast listeners, heads up. Heads up out there. Heads up. Here comes Kurt South.
And hey, look, when I was growing up, I lived right through the craze, man. And there was no bigger Michael Jackson fan than myself.
Oh, well, if you're from the age of 5 to 15, in the 80s at some point, you could not be totally... Every time we were talking about him going on stage that night at the Grammys, and he'd do a little spin and a quick moonwalk to the podium. I mean, it was just
it was awesome.
It was you just stood up and went, wow, did you see that?
It was incredible. Amazing. And there are certain givens when talking about Michael Jackson, one of the absolute all-time greatest entertainers, bar none.
Oh, no question.
Put out some, two or three of just albums that will always live, always.
Yeah.
Incredibly talented.
But wrong with America, how?
Well, we're just so celebrity obsessed. You know, people stand out in the street crying over Michael Jackson, a man they've never met, and all this stuff. I mean,
at some point,
you go, look, how bad is your life that you're just looking to Michael Jackson's death to give you something to grieve about? Come on, dry up and go back to work.
Yeah.
You know?
Kurt South there, our own beloved, having none of this Michael Jackson stuff. Oh, it's hard to just not agree with him on a lot of those points. So feverishly made. So impassionately spoken. There you have it. Well, speaking of Kurt, on a very recent episode, as we were kind of looking back on some things together, we had a great moment in which I finally got a chance to sort of tell Kurt and sort of outline what maybe his life is like. A Texas songwriter in Fort Worth, living at home, home during the day, works at night. What's his life like, some people ask me or ask Kurt. And Kurt started talking about how he loves staying at home, doesn't like going out in public, shuffling around his house. And I jumped in here and gave my assessment. And Kurt graded me on how close I was on talking about what Kurt South's ideal day is for life, for his life at his home, a typical day at Kurt South's home. This was my take on it from episode 51, number 8.
Well, I think you and I are very similar in that there is, if you ask me, what is my perfect day like? Mm-hmm. My perfect day often involves me not leaving the house. My whole
walking around. Let me paint.
Okay,
Kurt's house. Perfect day is he wakes up, puts on his favorite tattered robe.
What time do I wake up?
About 11:45.
No, you're wrong there.
Oh,
I'm
really?
An early riser, dude.
Okay.
I love waking up.
Okay, gets up at 6, puts on a tattered robe.
5:30.
A jug of cheap Carlo Rossi red wine.
Boy, you're wrong. You're missing.
Shuffles around the house. With like a shotgun over his shoulder and a putter in the other hand.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Just looks out the back window. He sees his neighbor kind of through the fence.
Take a shot at him.
No, he's just kind of, he doesn't know what he's doing, but you're kind of spying on him on what he's doing. Was he planting grass or something back there? He's working in the yard. You're keeping tabs on that.
Start throwing rocks over the fence.
You look out the window with your shotgun, and you see the same red pickup truck go down the street. You're like, oh, that guy's driven by two or three times. You know what I mean? Am I right? Am I getting close? Then you make a sandwich,
You're. It's scary.
Then you call me and go, you know what, Pritchett? We got it made, man. I'm like, well, that's right, Kurt. He goes, you know what?
My favorite thing to do.
My freedom cannot be bought. Woe to ye who look out their window and see Kurt South looking out of his window at you, keeping tabs on what you're doing down there in the neighborhood. You better, it's like the old Soul Hat song says, I'm the garbage man. I'm quiet as a mouse, but if you don't tie your bags, I'll burn down your house. Kurt South's kind of that kind of guy, a vigilante of the neighborhood. Beware of him. Beware. Well, Kurt and I talked back on episode 8, God, in the early going of the podcast, Had an email from somebody about, was there something I regretted about my career or something like that? Happy to say I didn't have a lot to throw at this. I don't know if I have a whole lot of regrets, thankfully. You always do your best. Don't look back, right? But I did have one big regret. As we drove through De Leon, Texas, years ago, Doug Holm with on bass and Keith Robinson on drums, where I almost had a chance, where I did have a chance, to play one night of high school football, and like a freaking idiot, turned it down. I still weep for the past. Those opportunities will never come again. From episode number 8, number 7.
Played it all the time, about once a month. So we went in there. We're driving through, stopped in De Leon to go into this convenience store, use the restroom, and it says restroom's out of order. So I kind of go, you know. So I go across the street to this other. I didn't move the car; it was filling up with gas. Walked across the street, went to this other convenience store. So I'm coming back, so I got to cross the street again to get back to the Suburban, and this school bus pulls up. You know. And just stops right in front of me. I'm standing on the curb. I think they're going to let some kids out. The door opens. There's this there's this man standing there with the coach's hat on, like the coach's shorts, like with the two buttons, you know, the little
polyester shorts.
Yeah, with the whistle. I mean, a coach. If you ask what a coach looked like, this was, hey, he's standing there. And he just says, you play nose guard? And all of a sudden there's this laughter in the whole back of the bus. There's all these kids dying laughing. And I'm like, what? He goes, you play nose guard? He said, we got a game here right down the road tonight. We've had some eligibility. We've lost some of our players, and we're not going to be able to field the team. Would you mind, you know, suiting up? And no one will know, you know, just. And I'm thinking about my gig, and it was happening kind of fast. All these kids were laughing, but this guy looked pretty serious. But I didn't know if it was a joke or I said, man, we're going to Waco. I'm in a band or something, you know. And the guy, he throws up his hands in dramatic fashion and kind of turns back to the bus and like, I tried or something. And everybody started clapping on the bus, like, yay, coach, or something. And I was like, what's going on here? And it wasn't a lot of kids, and they looked like they were like freshmen.
It's probably six-man football.
Well, no, don't the freshmen play, like, usually on Thursday nights or something?
Yeah,
the JV plays.
Yeah.
Or freshmen play Wednesday night. And
JV usually play on Thursday.
JV Thursday night. It might have been like a JV high school team, so maybe what. So they drive off. Well, I tell this story to Doug and Keith, they were in the. They weren't with me. I said, man, some guys asked me if I wanted to go play. And, dude, they were just, their eyes just lit up. And you know what? As I sat there telling the story and the reality set in, I regretted not just going with it. I mean, I played some show that night that I'd played a million times and would play a million times again. And I tell you what, man, I started cursing at high volume on the way to Waco. We considered for a time turning around and trying to find the game. And because the guys were like, dude, do you think they'd suit us up? Could we play? I could play special teams, you know. And we just – and I'm not telling you, especially with those two guys. Every day we got in the van for the next several years playing shows, we would just openly fantasize about what possibilities that night could have brought. You know, with all the usual – you know, rock and roll and the beer and the driving and the bars. You say, man, this one time we called in sick to a gig. Yeah, what for? We get on this. They said, you play nose guard. Phil just says, yes. I would do it now. Because, you know, back then I was trying to impress the club or something. You know what I mean? I thought I had something to prove.
Oh, yeah.
Now
yeah.
I got nothing to prove. I would have suited it up, man. And I tell you what, I lay in bed awake at night sometimes, visualizing, you know, doing the calisthenics out on the – before the just with my helmet on, daring not to take my helmet off. You know, I kind of had a scruffy beard. You know, I don't want to look.
What would happen if you'd been caught, though? Would there be some sort of legal ramifications?
I don't know.
That's big time cheating.
I'd have gotten coverage. I would have gotten some coverage and press.
Local musician.
Dude, we were sick. We were sick about it. I mean, because we were just fans. It was like, dude, man, some freshman kid, man, he couldn't keep me off the back of the quarterback, man. I, that coach, man, I'd convince him to put me in a defensive end, man. I'd come around the corner. Boom. Just be kicking. Holmes just like, you know what? Be a good play, man. You come around the corner. And then I just blitz up the middle, man. Middle linebacker. Man, you kidding me? Some 90, I'd be the biggest guy out there. You know, Doug is pretty, he went huge, but, you know, for a high school kid, sure. Fantasized about it. I was like, man, what if I picked off a pass? What if the game was tight? You know, what if I get in the game, some guy gets hurt, and I pick one off, and I run it back for the winning score, man? And I'm just reliving a life I had never lived, for the first time. And just, man, there's a party afterward, right? There's a party. Of course there's a party. Of course. Then we all just golly, keep it going.
You're having to buy beer for everybody.
We go to the ranch party, dude. They got the caddy, like, man, you're the guy. Oh, dude, we were idiots. Ridiculous. Not a day goes by, I don't see a school bus or go by some little JV field, and I dream, Kurt. My stomach turns, my jaw clenches, and I just think to myself about what might have been. That right now, there could be a 10-year-old newspaper out there with me on the cover, just going over the goal line, just hoisting the ball, you know, just huge upset, mystery man, you know, picks off game-winning pass or something, you know.
28-year-old with stubble.
Oh!
Wins
turns
the
out
game
he was a
for DeLeon
he turns
JV.
Out. He was a 27-year-old man that they picked up outside the All-Subs. It was not cleared to play. It'd be a scandal. Can you? Oh, that would have been great.
That would have been great.
See, back in those days, though, I didn't want to break the rules. You know, I'm still that way. I just play it close to the chest. You know, I mind my own business. I stay out where I'm. Oh, man, I've missed a huge opportunity there.
You did.
I missed a huge opportunity. Don't you agree?
Man, especially if your band could have gotten involved.
Oh, man, can you imagine?
If they could have gotten on the field.
Well, that would have been my deal. It would have been like free agency.
Pizza and the full band just goes out there and kicks some 15-year-old ass on the field.
I should have walked on the bus and said, all right, we'll play. But here's the conditions. First of all, I get to start, and I get to play defense. I get to play wherever I want. I'm just roving. And the other thing is we get to suit up Doug and Keith to be out there too, and we're starting also. Unless we decide in the middle of the game we want to play offense, then we'll play offense. I set the rules. Yeah, I'd be like Drew Rosenhaus, you know, like a sports agent.
Super agent.
Go in there, just mesmerize these kids with my charm, my charisma, with my leadership, and man, you know, next thing you know, dude, I'm on that bus before the game in my pads.
Giving the speech.
Dude, just giving the Gene Hackman Hoosier speech.
Yeah.
It's my book. We're going to be winners. Just get them. And everybody just at the end of the whole thing, I have the black streaks kind of running down my cheeks, you know, the sweaty, you know,
just
I'm just
the
sweaty.
Eye black everywhere.
Yeah. Maybe I'm dinged up a little bit. I got some bruises on the arm. You know, the cheerleaders just, you know, kind of looking at me like, who is that man? You know, kind of like the gunfighter. He'd come into town, nobody who he was. And he picks off the pass, and the lights are going down Saturday night, you know, weekend night. And I just sort of, you know, like Mean Joe Green in the old Coke commercial. You know how he goes down the tunnel. Yeah, with the jersey. And that could have been me, South. Just kind of, no one knows. We never got his name. You know, he just came in here, and he fired up this team. And he went out there on the field, and he backed it all up. And when it got to crunch time, we knew he was the guy to have out there. And by God, he came through. And that's it. And then I could go on and play gigs the rest of my life. But just let me have that moment.
And after the game, after you've scored the winning touchdown,
yeah,
you pick off a pass, just recruiters from NAIA and NC2A schools.
Oh, you know, that was
just
part of the deal.
We want to talk to that guy. Is he orally committed to anywhere?
Dude, that guy has a maturity and a feel for the game wise beyond his years. Yeah, we thought maybe there's some scouts here, you know, from a UT, a couple of Notre Dame guys in the just a guy out there leading. And man, you know, just in a few hours, I could have transformed the lives
into a blue chip recruit
of a town. Yeah, I could have. I mean, it sounds like a Michael J. Fox movie or something, kind of like a Doc Hollywood meets Hoosiers, you know, or something like that.
Did you just reference Doc Hollywood?
Doc Hollywood on the show. Just to where a kind of a big city guy goes into the small town, and it takes a while for the charm to kind of rub off on him, you know?
Yeah.
But by the end of that, man, I would have been changed. I would have been changed. Not only had I inspired this team in this town, and won the game and just gone back to my life and theirs and them to theirs, we both would have. It'd have been a Hollywood story, man.
Forget Everyone would
Rudy,
have come out better for it.
Forget Rudy and who's. This would have been the sports moment of all time.
Coming up in our next segment, our top 10 countdown of Phil Pritchett, Kurt South moments on the P2 podcast. For the first year of the podcast continues with Kurt and I discussing the value of the Doors' first album and my rant against the perils of keeping band merchandise in stock. Next. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, the only show hosted by songwriters, producers, and other people who are out there making music, struggling, slogging through weather, driving vans and fixing alternators, still showing up and rocking the house, man, writing songs, trying to pay the bills, and just keeping it all rolling. All because you send us emails saying you're great, man. Come back sometime. And we keep trying to do it. God bless you all out there listening to the P2 Podcast. We do it all for you. Well, we're in the middle of our countdown here. Fantastic. Fantastic fun stuff. Well, at number 6, we always talk about an album in the vault, of course, at the end of every show. Usually we agree, Kurt and I, on how great an album is. So this time we wanted to do something that we hadn't done before, which was go with a record that maybe we disagreed on. Kurt is always very down on the Doors as a pretentious, posing, preposterous rock band that offends him on so many levels. He's not alone in that opinion, but I stood up for my guy Jim Morrison. I know he's not much of a poet. The dude, rock and roll. Personified. Jim Morrison, the lead singer, sang from a dream state. You know, he just sang from, he was never fully with us. I think he just went off to high school, started partying, and just never came back. God bless him. I hope he's doing well. Well, we get into it on the Doors in episode number 41. A lot of strong emails and opinions about this. Pro and anti Doors folks out there. Tough talking about the Doors on a Texas music-based show, isn't it? Well, you pick a side. This is Kurt and I going at it. The Doors' debut record in the vault on episode 41. Number 6. I was very honored. Very honored to have that in there. So I had a long history with the Doors, with Jim Morrison. For God's sake, South, I grew up a cautious, conservative kid. You know what I mean? I'm a cautious, conservative adult, by large. I think there was something alluring to me, to someone like the Doors. Some guy that just was never sober his whole life. You know, was just all floating around on mountains. Jim Morrison, the Doors, the weird sounds. You don't buy it. Why not?
I thought it was horseshit back then. And I still do, over 20 years later.
Ray Manzarek, the great keyboardist. You had John Densmore on the drums, Robbie Krieger on guitar. We're talking about their very first record.
It had all the... Where is it? Let me see here.
Opens up and just break on through to the other side. Now, come on, if you're a Doors fan, this is the only album you need, really. You got Soul Kitchen's my favorite. Let me sleep all night. The Crystal Ship. How can you not like The Crystal Ship?
Easily.
Before you slip into... consciousness.
Hold on, y'all hear that? You hear that sound? That's my life force just draining.
Come on, dude. Jim Morrison, may he rest in peace. Well, there's Kurt South, tearing apart the Doors, trying to convince me otherwise, and me doing the same in reverse. The Doors, man. Pick up that first record, I still say it's great. Well, Kurt and I had a lot to say about this next topic, which comes in at number 5, where I lost my cool on the air. I started talking about the perils of keeping band merchandise in stock.
I hadn't planned on doing this. We were just going to discuss the, you know what, ordering T-shirts and CDs and responding to requests from fans and things like that. Oh, folks, I couldn't hold it back. I just, stuff just came spilling out of me. This was maybe one of the first episodes where I just freely let it fly. A liberating moment for myself. I hope you found it somewhat useful to you. As Phil, me, Pizu, loses his cool and goes on a rant against the perils of creating new and exciting band merchandise. Number five.
Right. They do. They do.
And let me first say this. I concur with Kurt. There's no greater feeling than someone buying your shirt, wearing your shirt, saying, "We love you, Phil. We want a shirt." It makes me feel great, and I want to make them for you.
I feel good right now just talking about
it. I know. It just gives me chills. I love it. Thank you very much. We do it all for you. That's kind of the point of this next little segment. We do it for the fans, honestly.
No doubt.
I will also say that there are tons of bands out there who probably do make money putting their names on T-shirts. That number,
we just don't know any of
that number is much smaller than anyone, including themselves, would ever know or care to admit.
Mm-hmm.
And now this is, and take this for whatever it's worth. This is me. This is 15 years, and I don't know how many hundreds of T-shirt different designs we've made over the years, hats. And man, the bottom line is this. I'm going to give you a scenario for you young bands out there and for the fans, just to know what someone like myself is up against. And this is a real life example. You make a T-shirt. Say, man, I'm going to make this T-shirt for my fans. Okay. Well, what do you want on it? I want my name on the front. Well, man, it's got to look good. You got to have the full color logo. And something on the back. We made this great-looking Maria shirt a while back. That guy that makes all the ragweed merch.
Yeah.
Outstanding. Oh, I can't remember his name. Anyway, we love you. He's up there in Oklahoma. It had Maria Don't Go on the back. Oh, he sold a lot of them. Full color, you know. He had the bubble and the big design, the P2 on the front. It looked great. Oh, man, we went for the large, thick thread count, you know. Well, man, to have those made, that was about $8 a shirt. I mean, that was not a cheap shirt. It gets more expensive, of course, on the front. On the back, that's more.
Higher quality shirt.
Higher quality
full
shirt.
Full color design.
Full color design. I mean, that's just up, 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 up. Well, all of a sudden now you're spending, and you're going to ship them to yourself. I mean, you're spending about $10 a shirt just to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the minimum run is to get that price is, you know, like 72 probably is the first maybe price break. So you're printing 72 shirts. Now, you know, for cross-Canadian ragweed, that's no big deal. But for, you know, for you or for me, you know, or for a lot of guys starting out, man, that's a hell of a lot of cash. I mean, you're talking $720.
Yeah.
In cash you probably don't have. So here's the scenario. Phil puts $720 on his Visa, you know, and the shirts show up. They look great. You sell. Oh, you sell 12 at the first show for $20 a shirt or something, okay?
You almost made your money back.
I mean, you're printing
back.
Your own money.
God.
I mean, that's $240 on shirts.
You're the U.S.
You follow me with the math here?
Man, I've got my calculator. I'm doing it right now.
And you tell yourself, man, I'm going to take this $240. I'm going to put it right back on the credit card. Well, look, I'm just telling you. You pay for gas. You pay for food. You pay the band. You blow a tire. You get home, and there's bills to pay. So, man, I don't know. Some of that cash gets in the bank. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. Plus, the bill for the credit card doesn't come in a while till the end of the month. Well, guess what? Those 12 shirts you sold were all, larges. So your merch guy, don't forget, you're paying him, too.
He gets 10%.
Merch guy gets 10%. He gets $50 a show plus 10%. So you're paying him, too. So now you're out of larges. And your merch guy says, dude, people are saying, we're the largest. Where's the extra largest? You're out of extra largest? He says, dude, we need more. We need more extra largest. And you're like, but dude, we just ordered shirts. He goes, dude, you're missing money. Don't you want to print your own money? And I think, well sure, I don't want to lose money, right? I want to be smart.
Absolutely.
So what do? You call your shirt T-shirt guy. I'm out already. We need these shirts are great. Man, I'm printing our own money here. We need 12 more. We need more extra largest. Well, do you want 72? That's the run. 72? I don't want 72 extra larges.
Well, Phil, to get that great $10 shirt price, it's $72. It's $720. Well, okay. Well, give me 30 extra larges and 30 more smalls. We'll stock up while we can.
Right.
So, okay, now guess what? You got another 72 shirts showing up. So by the time your credit card bill lands in your lap, you've got $1,440 on your credit card, okay? Mm-hmm. $1,440. And you have a garage with about, how many is that? 72 times, you know, about 144 shirts mm-hmm. minus the 12 you sold. So you have about, you know, 132 shirts in your garage, and that takes up a hell of a lot of space. You have 132 shirts sitting in your garage, looking great. Don't get me wrong.
They look awesome.
You have 132 shirts and boxes sitting there, and you have a credit card bill on your kitchen island for $1,440. And your band says, dude, you're just printing your own money.
Mm-hmm.
Congratulations. True. You'll go out and sell some more shirts here and there. I guess a band would have to sell like 100 in a night. I mean, you'd have to be able to turn them fast. It's just like Walmart. It's like, well, man, they make money selling shoes. But, I mean, you can't open Kurt South Incorporated at the strip mall, pay $1,000 in rent, and sell shoes.
Right.
You can't. It's volume wins, man, in the apparel game.
Well, in Walmart.
And it's the same in music. And these yeah. man, these bands are walking around going, we make all our money on merch. It's the biggest lie there is. No one will tell you that. Every band, because no band's going to admit it. They're not going to go, man, we're losing our ass in this merch, even though we're selling shirts. No one's going to say that. I will tell it to you because it's the freaking truth. Now, if you want to get a white T-shirt, one color front, Phil Pritchett, you know, just something very simple, and you know, maybe that only costs you $5 or $6 a shirt to make, and you can print them for, you know, 30, run 36 of them, have a couple designs.
Maybe, yeah.
You can break even. It's sort of maybe. That's kind of what we do.
That is my
merch story. True, true, true. Your credit card bill will max out, and you'll have a garage full of shirts. Out! So, the biggest lie there is. Band merchandise. We make all our money on the road, man, selling shirts. Yeah, right, I say. Well, Kurt South enlightened us with this next little tidbit. Way early on, episode 2. This was great. Kurt's a great storyteller. Man, I got a kick out of this story. He started talking about the death and the stealing of the body of Graham Parsons out in California. A lot of mystery, a lot of intrigue surrounding the death of that great artist. We did a lot of talk about Graham Parsons on the podcast. In episode 2, we were talking about Graham when Kurt brought up the story about his body being stolen. And I listened in horror and laughed at Kurt's the way he told the story. I love it where he just says, he has set Graham Parsons' body aflame. Great stuff here. The story of Graham. What else from Kurt South but a grim tale of a rock and roller's life coming to a destructive and fiery end? Who better to tell it than Kurt South? Number 4.
Graham Parsons is a lightning rod for a lot of people because he was a complete underachiever. While he was alive, he died tragically at the age of 27, as they all the greats do, in a motel room in Joshua Tree, California.
That's right.
Tanked up on just a deadly cocktail of
tequila.
Well,
the whole legend, of course, of the body. Remember, there was a whole thing.
Yeah, he had made a deal with his manager at the time, one Phil Kaufman, who also formerly worked for the Rolling Stones, a notorious, legendary rock and roll figure on the management end. Just a crazy SOB.
Yeah, yeah.
He had made...
The guy always gets paid, though, I bet.
Yes. He asked Phil Kaufman, when he passed away,
right,
if he would take his body out to Joshua Tree, which is a national park in the deserts of southeastern California.
Right, right.
And burn his body in the desert.
Yeah, and so like that a funeral pyre kind of Viking burial kind of thing.
Yeah, so that he could just
Indian
live
burial.
In the desert for eternity.
Right.
Well, Graham Parsons dies...
unexpectedly, of course. Young.
Yeah.
out of nowhere.
On heroin, had a lot of morphine,
yes.
Tequila, and it's just that was it for him. The plan was originally for his stepdad and his mother lived in New Orleans, and they were to take Graham's body back to New Orleans and bury him.
Right.
And Graham had made it clear that he didn't want to be buried in New Orleans, and nor did he care for his stepfather and all
that. Of course, you can't get buried in New Orleans. You're buried above ground.
Yeah, no kidding.
In a crypt, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe he was hip to the whole deal. You know?
He was hip.
He didn't want to go floating out in the ocean
in
the next hurricane.
Ahead of his time. He didn't want to be. He didn't want to be just floating in the Gulf of Mexico, just dodging shrimp boats for eternity. You know. So.
Oh man.
So Phil Kaufman goes to the airport and intercepts Graham Parsons' body before it is put on a plane and flown back to New Orleans to be buried in the family.
To carry out his dying wish.
Yes, to carry out his dying wish. And he succeeds in getting Graham Parsons out to Joshua Tree.
But like in a pickup truck? I mean, just get the coffin in the back of the truck?
He drove a hearse anyway.
Oh, really?
He was a freaking nature, you know.
Rhett Miller, old 97s, used to drive a hearse in Dallas.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Little known
sign
story.
Of rock and roll greatness.
Sign of rock and roll greatness. Topic for another time. Please continue.
So Kaufman makes good on his promise, and later, some hours after, Kaufman has set Graham Parsons' body aflame.
Just him out there?
Yeah.
Just with some gasoline
just
and a match?
Some gasoline, and you know, he puts a beer and a bottle of booze in his
just
jacket. Just
throws it in.
Someone reports to the park service,
yeah.
Hey, there's a fire in the park. And they go out there, and one thing leads to another. They find out that a body is missing from the airport, and then they find one burning in the desert. So, you know, they figure out it's Graham Parsons just burning up the night. And Phil, it turns out that stealing a corpse is not illegal, technically.
What?
No, the only thing that
in
they...
In California?
In a lot of states, they actually... Now, before it's in the grave, exhuming a grave without authorization is illegal.
I see.
But there's no law on the books about taking one that's...
So what happened? They let him go?
He got charged with was theft of the casket, which was
not
like $600. Yeah, so it was just... He didn't do any jail time or anything. He paid a fine.
Wow. Were the remains out there? Or did you
just kind of half-burned.
Yeah.
And they wound up taking what was left of him. And he wound up in New Orleans anyway, in a shady, shady cemetery off of the airport highway in New Orleans.
Stick around, fans, for our final segment where we reveal the top three moments from the P2 podcast in the year 2009. Looking back on the top 10 moments with me, Phil Pritchett, and Kurt South, what will be number one? Well, I can tell you what. I lie down on the couch in our next segment here, looking back on episode 7 and discuss why the Traveling Wilburys always scared me and kind of, you know, creeped me out a little bit. Stay tuned. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Thank you for downloading Alive Alone, the new bootleg solo acoustic live record, exclusively offered on p2tunes.com. 24 songs for $4. Who else is going to let you have it all like that? But right here, folks, made just for you, the fan. And you know what? Every other artist will say, tell everyone you know. You know what? Don't tell anybody who doesn't deserve it. Unless it's a close friend, a confidant, someone who can benefit from hearing this music, then by all means, pass it on. Burn them a blank CD and say, check it out. It's yours for $4. Go to Phil. Call us to come play at your party, 817-733-5256. Or come here, record at the studio, Trinidad. Phil at philpritchett.com. Oh, we're down to the final three here. Coming in at number three, I lie down on the IKEA sofa. Kurt South picks up the notepad, and I just reflect. I have a cathartic moment where I just reveal that although I love the individual artists in the Traveling Wilburys, Tom Petty, Bob Dylan, Roy Orbison, George Harrison, Jeff Lynne, all the great artists, and I do love the Traveling Wilburys records and songs, when I see footage of them and think about them,
in the mid-80s with their acid-wash jeans and tank tops and all still smoking and drinking and breathing, you know, just coffee and tea breath on each other and smoking. And I was trying to get at the heart of why the Traveling Wilburys, against my better judgment, always kind of creeped me out. Kurt, helped me out in this segment from episode 7. Number 3.
When I see a photograph, when I hear the name, when I see something on TV, I get creeped out and I cringe. Mm-hmm. Kurt, I'm going to lay down on the psychiatrist's couch here.
Get comfortable.
And I need an analyst is what I need.
All right,
because I know I like all these guys individually. How come as a collective group known as the Traveling Wilburys, I'm a little creeped out? Help me, doctor. Doctor, help!
A lot of it was the time that it happened. You're in the late 80s. Everyone is creepy in the late 80s.
Do you have a pillow I can put under my head?
Yeah, here you go. Get comfortable. There you go. You feeling better?
I'm feeling a lot better. I'm on the couch here, folks.
The 80s was a creepy time. Parachute pants and velcroed Reebok high tops. All that
and, of course, these guys weren't young. They're not on. They're not wearing the Vans.
That's the Pat McGee's hats
or something. They can't pull that off. So what does an old guy from the 60s do in the 80s?
He looks creepy because he's wearing the neon hypercolored tank top or whatever.
Maybe that's got something to do with it.
And he's got the shark's tooth earring dangling down about three inches. You know, and he's wearing some LA Gear sneakers and
top white Reeboks,
just acid wash jeans.
And they have not reached the kind of reform rehab 90s yet.
No.
They're still drinking, whiskey, smoking two packs of cigarettes.
Yeah.
I think that's part of it, man. Yeah. Cause I see them clumped around a console.
Yeah.
And I see Lynn with his sunglasses on. Frizzy poodle hair.
He's the Mrs. Doubtfire of rock and roll.
Yeah,
by
just out there, and you see Petty kind of leaning over his shoulder, and Petty's kind of talking right into his ear, and you know Petty's just
scoring drugs.
He's just smoked a couple cigarettes, had some coffee. Yeah, his breath's got to be late at night or something.
Yeah.
Then Dylan's over there in a pink tank top with some stubble growth. You know, he's got a cigarette in his mouth. He's leaning over Lynn as well. There's all this conversation happening. I'm thinking, man, I start, and then the door swings open. Here comes Harrison, you know,
just wearing a zebra print blazer.
he's in a acid wash denim trench coat, you know, wielding a double neck Ovation acoustic. You know,
yeah.
He's kind of got the spiked hair and kind of yellow British kind of teeth.
Yeah.
He's always, let's do some more guitar on the album, yeah. they're all in there smoking, and there's hair everywhere. There's orange clothes, acid wash, high top. Is that where this comes from?
Yeah.
And, of course, we love Roy Orbison, but come on. You want to talk about creepy.
Creepy.
Jet black hair, the jet black glasses.
Pale white, pasty skin.
Oh, he looks like a vampire.
Yeah.
You know, he's just in the corner, maybe not saying too much. You know, yeah. Roy, how are we going to involve him in the record? And he kind of comes into the soundboard. He's always a little creepy anyway.
He's about to morph into a werewolf or something.
Yeah. He's trying to put his head in the sweet spot there in the mix. So he's leaning down. So Lynn all of a sudden has like Orbison's kind of a old man, kind of beer gut, kind of pressing into his shoulder blades a little. You know, as he tries to get and there's cigarette smoke swirling. And I just hear, well, it's all right, even when you say all right. And I start to cringe a little bit. I have to skip the station. And I've had nightmares. I've shot up in bed at night wondering, well, how come I cannot come to terms with all these great artists together? Where would I be without Kurt South to psychoanalyze me every now and then? Oh, we can all benefit so greatly from it, can't we? Well, that gets us to the final two here, folks. Which one to put number one? Oh, you know, you can make an argument for a lot of these to be in the top five or number one. I'll no doubt get some emails from y'all. Send me your opinions on the top 10 list. What do we leave out? I'd be curious to hear. Phil at PhilPritchard.com, as always. Well, our final two. I kind of went back and forth here. Number two. I went with Phil and Kurt going to North Carolina to play the Great King Fest Festival,
We drove all the way out there and ended up having some spare time. So we went out on the midway there where all the carny rides are and stuff and decided, oh, come on, let's have a little fun. We'll play a little miniature golf. We'll go on the little slide, a little roller coaster. And we get in the little teacup thing. We're waiting in line and to our horror, through some safety mandate or some policy of the carnies out there, I thought I was under the impression I would be in my own teacup spinning around and just sort of laughing at Kurt in another teacup. To our horror, we are put into the same little car, pressed against each other, and hilarity and disconcerting adventures ensue with Phil and Kurt together in North Carolina trying to have some fun and just getting ourselves into an awkward situation. Coming in at number two from podcast number 17, Phil and Kurt go to North Carolina. Number two. A lot
of fun. Then we walk out of the thing, and we're like, it's still early, you know. We just have a room out there at the on the golf course where we're staying for the weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, there's all this activity. There's just people enjoying themselves everywhere. I'm not a guy. I'd never go to like Six Flags or anything. You know, I'm not much of a. You know, like with the kids, we'll go do something, but it's just not something we do a whole lot. So Kurt and I get the great idea. I kind of say, and it's getting late. It's kind of thinning out a little bit.
Yeah,
There's no one. It's like, I think at 10:30 this whole deal kind of shuts down. So the fair and the rides are kind of getting quieter. There's no crowds. We weren't going to go wait in line out there. So we look up, and man, there's no lines in any of these rides and things. So I make the fateful decision to, I said, man, let's get some tickets. Let's ride some rides, man. You know, it'll be fun. Come on. So I go over to the booth. I get the family package, whatever, the 30 tickets for, you know, $85. I don't know what it was. Phil just, it was a lot.
Phil just laid two $100 bills at the counter.
Yeah,
I'm
alongside a bunch of like 12-year-old kids with my tickets just folding, just dragging behind me. All right. You know, so we're, and Kurt and I, so our first idea, I mean, there was a very active ride machine.
Scrambler.
The Scrambler, which is a, it's kind of like a Ferris wheel laid on its side, sort of, but it has, or like an octopus. There's a middle part, the arms.
Yeah.
At the end of each arms is kind of a spinning.
It's kind of like the teacup ride.
Yeah, the teacup deal, but this is like some high-powered voltage. So we approach this ride. Every arm of this deal has a small pod that two people can fit in, supposedly. So there's people screaming and twirling around in this thing. It's going pretty fast. I mean, this would be pretty fun, kind of a good startup thing. Of course, so we're in line, and there's a lot of people on the ride. Well, when the ride stops and everybody gets off, the people coming off the ride obviously know the people in line.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all laughing like, oh, did you see me? Ha, 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 yeah, 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 yeah. All of a sudden, the people in line, I figure out, weren't in line. They were just waiting for the people on the ride to get off.
Right.
They're all on some bus or something. So all of a sudden, the people in front of us in line and all the people on the ride leave. Leaving.
Yes.
What? The two cowboy guys.
Well, it was you and I. It was a grandmother and her grandson, and then there was like three 12-year-old girls
and a couple of and these dudes running the machine, folks. Rough. I mean, a couple of carnies.
One
right?
word: methamphetamine.
Yeah, yeah. Guy with like no teeth.
Yeah.
Ponytail, just bronze from the sun. Like two cigarettes hanging out of his mouth. He's just looking at us like, what is going on?
Yeah.
So I got my tickets out there, and I go kind of like a joke. Yeah, we thought we'd do this or something. So the guy just nods, and of course I'm thinking at this point, I'm not privy to any sort of safety features on these kinds of rides. I don't understand the balance and all that kind of stuff. I'm assuming that I would get my own car, my own pod. So I'm sort of mapping out, well, Kurt can be across, that way we could like laugh at each other and stuff. Well, this guy marches us right to whatever, pod number 8.
It was pod number 3. I'll never
forget.
You
gentlemen will be in pod number 3. And Kurt and I just shoot each other a glance. And I go, we were hoping we could each like have our own car.
You'll be in pod 3.
The guy goes, you're in pod 3. We've got another couple over here. Got to keep the machine balanced. I'm just like, of course, I almost said, well, we don't want to ride it. But I don't want to offend this gentleman with no teeth, and I didn't want to offend Kurt. So I just kind of go, oh, big deal.
So you just grabbed my hand and dragged me on?
So next, folks, what you're seeing out there on the Atlantic Ocean is Phil Pritchett and Kurt South squeezing themselves together, mashing flesh against flesh into this little...
What like made it even shape. Worse? what made it even worse is when we first sit down in the little pod.
I'm Phil, trying. You know,
Phil just looks at me and goes, "Dude, just don't be leaning
on
me."
Yeah, just don't be.
Well, little did we know that there's only one seatbelt.
Yeah, you got to share
one
like
long
Velcro seatbelt. So the guy comes over and like helps us fasten it.
Yeah,
it's like scoot together, gentlemen.
There was maximum.
So Kurt
contact.
And I just have to. We have to just wedge ourselves together. Very awkward. Very uncomfortable. Very disturbing. We're sharing a seatbelt for crying out loud. Yeah. Then they put this metal bar down to ensure that our arms, our sides, and our thighs are just pressed flushed against one another. Very disturbing. Now I'm not having any fun. I'm thinking, why did we do this? You know.
Yeah.
And so these carny guys are over there, and they start kind of laughing. They light up a couple cigarettes. They're just like looking over at us, just laughing. We're sitting there in our cowboy boots, and our jackets. You know, just looking like something out of
They thought the gay biker urban gang was out.
No,
what was it?
Dustin Hoffman Midnight Cowboys.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, just disturbing. Just disturbing. Well, the ride starts up. Of course, centrifugal force comes into play. Kurt's body is just smashing against me. Very disturbing. Very disturbing.
Well, and you were on the
sleep.
You were on the inside.
I know. I was on the inside. So
you had the wrong end of the deal because I outweigh you by about 50 pounds.
Yeah.
So I was just. I'm surprised you didn't break bones. But once they started the ride...
I don't even want to think about it right now.
Phil and I are just sitting there
think about
just
it.
Screaming like schoolgirls mashed up against each other.
Screaming. I was going, get off me, get off me. And I was screaming. I was dizzy. I think I'd had a couple beers. I mean, I'm sort of swirling. I haven't been on one of these machines in a long time. So I started getting a little nauseous. I'm swirling around. I got Kurt South's hairy arms just kind of pressing against my cheek. Oh, my gosh. Don't ever do it, folks. You think you're being all fun, you're going to do some things, just like the old days when you were a kid. You can't go back again.
It's not like you remembered it.
Yeah. I can still feel Kurt South's prickly arm hair just, scratching against me in that car. Still have nightmares about it. Ugh. Horrible. Horrible. I'll never be the same. Well, that brings us to number one. Oh, man. Any of these could have been number one, maybe. Maybe we left out a number one. Let us know if we did. Email me, phil@philpritchett.com. Well, on episode 27, we were talking about what I liked about this one. It wasn't really a topic we were going to address. We were just talking about album art in general. Some cool covers. Like, hey, Sticky Fingers had the zipper on there. That's pretty memorable. And how album artwork isn't as important now because you just got a little thumbnail picture on iTunes. And we started talking about the album covers we like, and there's the grainy beard album type deal. And Kurt starts talking about his ideal album cover. And we stumble onto the blanket statement, the all-encompassing theory, that if it's an album cover with everybody just in floral print shirts and sandals, just, hey, life is great, the album's probably no good. If you're having too much fun making a record, it's probably not worth a damn. Therefore, the records we love, ladies and gentlemen, by and large, are the ones with the guys, wandering in the woods with a beard and a dog and a dulcimer or something like that. And this just got me going. Some of the things Kurt says just drops me to the floor. I can't remember if it's in this exact segment or not, but album cover talk and Kurt South talking about his ideal album cover or maybe what he's going to put on his next album cover. It is discussion of album art and Kurt South album art on episode 27, winning the P2 Podcast Top 10 for 2009. Number one.
All right, I want my next album cover to be me crying just a tear.
With a handkerchief just in a fetal position in a corner.
Just track marks on one of my arms and just an empty bottle of liquor. sticking out of my pants. Something like that. John, are you taking notes on this? That's what I need.
Reynolds is over here. He's thinking of a design concept.
He's doing
South
sketches right now. It's just a
That's
picture
right.
of me shirtless, just
laying on a bathroom
floor. Painted like a mime or something.
Yeah.
Just smeared lipstick everywhere.
Stop.
An empty box of Franzia wine on the floor. This is good stuff, man. Write this shit down.
Every person in the world would just look at that artwork and just think, man, this guy, I got to hear what this is.
South, age 35, sexually confused.
That's right.
Crying.
Some of the worst album covers were some of those like Ozzy Osbourne, like 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Like in a pirate shirt with makeup and like holding like a dove in one hand. And like
sandwich in the other.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, thank you for lending me your ears once again. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. I hope you enjoyed the top 10 Kurt South and Phil Pritchett moments from the year 2009. With any luck and with your support, folks, download those records for $4. All those little things, man, go such a long way into keeping the podcast going and all that. We just appreciate it all the time. Every little order you make comes right across my desk. I see everyone's name. I see what they order. It's a cottage industry. What can I say? If you order a T-shirt, I'll write a little note on the envelope or on the packing slip to you saying thanks because I do appreciate it so much. Like I say, there's no one between me and the music and you, the fan out there. So if you want to book us, call me, 817-733-5256, or come record in the studio. Let us know what we can do for you. I'm always there. Phil@philpritchett.com. I'll get right back to you. Thanks for listening to this edition of the podcast. Oh, we got so many great ideas for the year 2010 already in the works to bring to you, the fan. We got radio stations out there that are going to start carrying the podcast here and there, so be listening for that as well. But as always, you know where to go for your source for Phil Pritchett news and events and all discussions on the music that you love and the people who make it, the P2 Podcast. Thanks for keeping us in your hearts and minds, folks. We will see you next week.
Country music is alive and well, but it's all gone the way of big band, y'all. As far as I can tell, they're both in a museum behind the glass, but rock and roll is the future.